Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Todd Sanders. Todd Sanders lives in Pittsburgh, where he works as a graphic designer, poet, and translator. In 1999, he formed the Air and Nothingness Press, AANPress.com, to facilitate the publishing of his translations of French surrealist poet Robert Desnos. To date, he has published 5 books of translations by Desnos: The Circle and the Star, The Secret Book for Yuki, Callisto, Mythmaking, and Voyage in Burgundy. He also has 2 previously published collections of his own poetry, entitled Underland and Lac River. His newest book is called Species of Night, and that was just published in 2010. Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here.
Thanks. I was actually on Prosody about 15 years ago, so this is interesting to be back in your newer location.
Yeah, when John Shulman was the host.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to read some early poems by Robert Desnos from your second collection, The Secret Book for Yuki.
Yes, to start with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, just give you a little explanation. Yuki was... Her real name is Lucy Badul. She was the wife of the only Japanese surrealist, Fujita. The two of them had a tumultuous relationship, and Desnos sort of loved her from afar and had written a series of poems for her that became this book, The Secret Book for Yuki. These are actually some of my favorite ones that I've translated, in fact, because of the very deep feelings of love he had for her that show in them. So we'll start with the first one, which is called To the Siren Queen. With the Siren Queen, there's a cabaret where I am sitting down for a meal this evening among tables empty and naked as tombs. Black tie waiters busy around chairs without occupants. In their suits of ravens, they appear to celebrate the marriage of solitude and night. And me, I wait. Sometimes the telephone rings and no one answers. And perhaps it is you at the end of the line, far from here, calling me. But no one answers, and I do not know what force forbids me to go over to take the receiver in my hands and say, "It's me. Alcohol shines in bottles. Come, come rapidly. We will drink all night if you desire it. If you want to sleep, you will sleep in my arms while waiting for the morning of crystal dew and wet sheets that fall as a wave on the city. Over there, the house is empty. I run from room to room calling. I cry on your pillow. I sob your name because no year passing after another year will be able to distract my thought from your thought, my desire from your desire, and my mouth from your mouth. Sheets will dirty without being crumpled on the bed where you like to sleep, and I, heartbroken to be alone, call your name imagining what insults you submit to, foul and filthy worms that destiny has set on our path." Yuki, light of my nights. Do you remember the nights when you appeared at the window of my door, when you rose up in the darkness of my house, when you fell down in a heap on my bed like a great bird, tired of passing oceans and plains and forests? Do you remember your words of greeting, of salvation? Do you remember my words of welcome, my words of love? No, you do not. No one remembers the present, no one. Now it is night, and you appear, you arrive, you fall in a heap on my bed. And I, your servant and your submissive defender, obedient to your law as you are to my love. It is midnight, it is noon, it is quarter past midnight, it is half past midnight. It is midnight to come or noon just past. It is midday ringing. It is always midday ringing for my love, for our love. All sounds, all sighs, and your lips. And on my bed you fall in a heap between midnight and 4 in the morning, like a great albatross escaping storms. And one last one, incantation. Let nothing reach them, nor anything separate them. Let nothing separate the seahorse from the siren from the seahorse, Robert from Yuki, Yuki from Robert. Let anyone who would try it be put to death, be punished, suffer 1,000 evils. by their embraces and their kisses, by their words, their confidences, their common secrets, their flesh, and let nothing reach her but that which is in its beauty, in its youth, in its health and fortune, in its happiness and in its life, and let them be united soon.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Todd Sanders, and he's reading some of his translations by the poet Robert Desnos. You know, I was going to ask you, Todd, are you going to be reading any of the French tonight?
My French pronunciation is not great because my translation is really from French to English, but there are a couple that I will read some passages in French, yes.
Okay.
But I apologize for the French speakers out there who will wince.
Okay. Because I'm really interested in that. I'd like you to talk about your – I don't know if you'd call it an obsession with Robert Desnos. It seems like that. I mean, obsession in the best sense.
Yes, it is in part. I long ago found a book of poetry edited by Paul Auster, his 20th century French poetry collection that Random House put out. And Desnos was really the standout in that collection. There are a number of surrealist poets out there, but Desnos, I think, really is the finest. And he sort of transcended eventually what the basis of surrealism was and really is just a very fine 20th century French poet, one of actually France's best. I had run out of things to read of his in English because he's very little translated, and out of desperation I started doing these translations just to have new things to work from. Desnos has hundreds and hundreds of poems, several novels that have not yet been translated as well. And over time translating those, I got better and better at that and formed the press, as you said, to start to facilitate the publishing of that, to share that work with others. And that's really the main impetus behind it, is to get his work out there. He's not very well known in the U.S. He is a national hero in France due to his activities during World War II. And the more I translate of his work, the more intense and dense the sort of beauty I find in it. And he, as a poet, has, of course, altered my own work over time. You can't really translate somebody without really getting into the mechanics of how they write. Mm-hmm. And then have that affect you. And in fact, I can't write my own poetry when I'm doing his work because while our voices are similar, his voice is different, and I kind of have to really switch gears quite majorly to do my own work.
Well, what happens if you write your own work while you're working on his? Do you start to sound like him? Or?
I do start to sound. There are certain phrasings and structural pieces to his poetry. Repetitions of phrase is one. Some of his most famous novels, actually, he even stops in mid-sentence and says, think about Robert, what you're writing here, and start again. So those kinds of pauses. He is very well known for his sort of puns and plays on words and alliterations, which, of course, in French you can have double, triple meanings to a phrase, which is very hard to do in English. But that sort of cadence of rhythm and that sort of music does come through in my own work. I tend to write prose poetry, which is a different animal entirely in terms of how lines are broken and how you use pauses compared to his poetry, where those sort of manipulations – because he was actually a very formal structuralist poet too. He could write perfect sonnets, Alexandrines, you know, all the very French forms. In fact, he's well known for what were called the sleep sessions, where he would actually fall asleep and dictate perfectly rhymed and metered poetry while supposedly asleep, and then wake back up again, and everyone would marvel at his ability. Incredibly facile with words.
Wait a minute. You're saying while he was asleep?
Yes.
While he was sleeping.
He and René Crevel, who was a fellow poet, would go in what they call the sleep sessions. Desnos would fall into a trance-like sleep and declaim poetry, you know, perfect sonnet forms and other sets, you know, very complex. You know, as you know, this is some really complex French structural forms of poetry from the 16, 1700s.
Oh, maybe, maybe we're doing that, but no one knows what no one's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of amazing. Okay, I have lots of questions for you, but could you read some more?
Sure. In fact, I will read some of these poems that have the kind of the sing-song and plays on words. I'm going to read this one called Bouquet. I'll read it in badly broken French first to give you an idea of the poem, and then I'll talk a little about the English. So, Bouquet. Trois pensées, trois colicots, trois soucis, trois rosés, Trois au lait, les trois rosies pour mon ami, les trois au lait pour mon ami, les trois colicots pour la petite fille, si triste, les trois pensées pour mon ami, les trois soucis pour moi. All of the main words in this poem actually have two meanings. So our poem's operating at two levels. At the first level, the poem is three pansies, three poppies, three marigolds, three marigolds, three roses, three carnations, three roses for my love, three carnations for my friend, three poppies for the young girl so sad, three pansies for my friend, three marigolds for me. However, the word for pansy, which in French is pensée, which is also the word for thought, the word colicot, which is the word for poppies, is also the word for blush. Souci, which is marigold, was actually the flower of worry in 16th century French flower meanings. So this poem is also three words, three blushes, three worries. Three worries, three tears, three glances. Three tears for my love, three glances for my friend. Three blushes for the young girl so sad. Three thoughts for my friend, three worries for me. And in French, you would actually get both those meanings at the same time. English, of course, is a lot harder to translate that. And actually, there's quite a number of Desnos's poems that will never be rendered into English because of that, because of just the puns don't work.
Have you translated any of those? Or?
I have, and they come out extremely boring. There's one poem he has that actually has a question and an answer, which is done much in an oldie Poe sense, that the question and answer you actually pronounce the same way. And in English, it's, why are you attracted to Teresa? I'm attracted to be her because of her magnetism. And just you're just completely lost. There's a lot of puns. There's one he does on the fact the word sofa or couch in French is very close to hors d'oeuvre. And the two – and it just does not work well in English. He also does a lot of combining of words. This is a poem called Weeping Songs, which in French is Chantepleurs. Each of the first sets of words in the song – in the poem here are actually our combination words. Quail song, flower of streets. Magpie song, flower of forests. Wolf song, flower of waters. Love song, flower of night. Death song, flower of spots. Drunken tears, fruit of dawn, embracing tears, fruit of eyes. Welcome tears, fruit of my hands. My tears, fruit of my lips. My weeping, fruit of time. And I'm going to read one more, which I actually comes probably closest to rendering the kind of rhymes that he does in French into English. In French, this is the poem, the homonym, which I read a little of the French, which is En entente, en natante, la entente, sous qu'il tente, mais tente, un elle engendre. So as you see, it's just this sort of dance of these sort of three syllables. So in English, the homonym, content while I contend with weaving the moment I attend, under what tents have my aunts, mother the nephews silent, that no one under the heavens is meant to call his cousins. While I contend with weaving the hair of silences, six lances, pierce my thoughts so content. So you get a little something of what that in what they're seeing in the French. I'm going to do one last one for you, and this is actually one of his more silly poems. Desnos had a great sense of humor. He was a really wonderful, I think, person altogether. There's lots of stories of him and his sort of friendships. This is a poem called The Bon Bon, which, of course, in French has two meanings as well, which is the little candy, chocolate candy, but also bon, meaning good. So it's the goody-goody or sort of goody-two-shoes. So I will read this. I am the king of the mountains. I have beautiful, beautiful boo-boos, beautiful, beautiful eyes that shine. I have a nose. I have a finger on each hand. I have a tooth, 26 of them. You make me suffer. But no matter, there is the door.
That's great. It's also great for our listeners who aren't seeing you that you were moving around while you were doing it and pointing at your nose and your fingers and everything. It was a good performance piece.
Thanks.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Todd Sanders, reading translations by the French surrealist poet Robert Desnos. Wow. I want to ask you about what might be primary when you're translating, because you brought up the issue of, you know, double meanings and how that presents a challenge. But sound is so important. Line is so important.
Yes.
How do you manage all that? Is it something you try to balance? Or
it is. And for me, translating, from what I understand theory-wise, there's sort of two schools of thought. One is very literal. These are the words as written. Here they are presented in English or whatever language you're translating into. I believe more actually the sort of W.S. Merwin school of thought, which is you're rendering a concept of the poem a lot of the times, because a lot of times the language that it's coming from is not one that readily works in English. So I gave the example of, let's say there's a poem that in the language, you know, it's nothing is worth the lizards under the rock, which has a very literal meaning. You can translate it that way, but we would use the bird in hand here in English. And so it's, do you translate that rendering such one way or the other? I tend to try to go of a balance that the words are the words as intended. I'm never going to render fully the music, but I'm going to try to bring that quality at least forth.
His music.
Poem. Right.
The music of Desnos.
Yes.
Even if while you're rendering, you come upon a colloquial usage in English that has a different kind of music, how do you then remain loyal to the music of Desnos? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and that often will, on my books, I can actually do one more than one translation, or I footnote and I really kind of talk about that. I like to be actually an active annotator in my books and really explain what's
nice.
Going on in the poems. There's actually one book of his that I translated, Callisto, which is a very long resistance poem that he wrote towards the Nazi occupation. And there's a section in the center of that. It's 6 pages long. And the French book I translated from actually had a translation from French slang to French, because the French people would not even get the 1940s sort of French slang. So that actually was 6 months to do those 6 pages. Rendering that, I had a French to British slang dictionary. And then I rendered that then further into more of an American gangster slang sort of 1940s terminology. So I'd run these sort of parallel translations at the time. And then, of course, it's been – there's a lot of annotated notes in that book about what that section is.
You know, speaking of that, I mean, you're clearly a very precise man and very intense. And not that I know you that well, but, you know, it's clear. And you know, you talked about out of desperation I started translating Desnos. It just seems that there's such a connection between, you know, the there's a deep romantic feel about his poetry that also feels very intense and precise. And not to get too cosmic, but it seems like a very unusual connection you have with him.
Yeah, I mean, I found his work early on when I was in college. Age 19, which, of course, I think we all find that one author, that poet at that age that really kind of defines us. Desnos is very famous for the sort of last line. He, a lot of his poems, the very famous ones, the last lines are just these just wonderful little statements. Just me, Robert Desnos, who, for having loved you, doesn't want to be remembered for anything else on this despicable earth, which is one of the ones I love. And he just really... Yeah, just this sort of syncopation of his work. And although those of us who translate him and the couple of books that are out there, criticism, the critics of him in English, we all kind of agree that he's sort of a friend to us. We know we've never met him. There are a very few recorded instances of his voice. He actually was an early radio pioneer in Paris. He had the first show with radio sound effects on it. People would send him his dream, their dreams. He would then, with his cohort of actors, actually act out the dream on the radio and then interpret what the dream meant.
Maybe it would have been cool if he could have been asleep on the radio and done some of those sleep sessions.
But yeah, his intensity, I mean, just the romance, as we sort of talked in the pre-show interview, he's really an ancestor of the sort of court tradition of romantic poetry that goes all the way back to the 1600s with Ronsard, through people like Baudelaire of the Symbolist era. These very intense. That's why he really transcended surrealism. He was a surrealist poet, yes, but he was also a French poet. Mm-hmm. And the French poet was the sort of primary. In fact, he left the surrealist group after Breton started acting a little more like the high pope of surrealism and declaiming that you can't be a newspaper reporter, you can't have a day job, you can't write these other types of poetry. And Desnos said, no, poetry is poetry. It's this beautiful thing. I'm going to go do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And in fact, his last letter to his wife when he was in one of the concentration camps spoke about how when he hopefully would be freed that he would write this whole new kind of poetry based on math and had all these, you know, sort of explanatory ideas and mm-hmm. interesting new directions he wanted to go. Like that, of course, unfortunately didn't happen. But
okay. Well, I know that you have some of your own poems here. It would be nice to hear something that you've written. And
sure, and actually can a little compare to that. I'll read a couple here from Species of Night, which, as you mentioned, is my most latest book. As I said, I write myself prose poetry. That seems to be the form I kind of settled on very early on in college during my sort of early poetry career. For me, the kind of line breaks and things that structurally are internalized for me in this poetry I tend to write this in a very stream of consciousness, surrealist manner, I suppose, sort of flows out of me. So I tend to read them also a little fast because they're sort of whirlwinds in my own head. But let's try a few out here. This first one is called Correspondence. You are resonant, shadow bright in all of complication and the marvelous. Understand, I could whisper to you, I could tell you 1,000 flattering things that make you smile and make you laugh, but you know them already. You do not know every word I would wish to speak, those small, fragile things I create. If granted the time, the power, I might turn this world, fold it close to a space near your own, a space gladly inhabited, if only to know more of you, if only to understand your ravens, your mirrors, your world, the person you are. Come and be a force and nature and beauty and all that is seen in your eye, held in your hand, warmed in yourself. There is no center around which I would choose to revolve right now, more than this one, more than you. There is time in these boundary hours of May and night. Yes, oceans, yes, distance, yes, time. Yes, I say yes to all of it. Yes, come. This next one is entitled Seldom, and I tend to write a lot of poems that actually sort of trade the marvelous and the everyday. I read a lot of fairy tales and folk tales and myths as well, and so this is an attempt about that. Seldom. It is only when I breathe that I think of you. It is only when I awaken or fall into sleep that I remember who you are. It is only when, purely by reflex, I open my eyes and shut them tightly again that I can hear your voice as if you were speaking to me. It is on those rare occasions that I find myself walking or sitting or lying down. It is on those rare occasions that I find my thoughts work their way towards you, across miles and miles of immeasurable distance. Only then do I pause and think of you. And I'll read one more here. This one is called You Will Understand, and I think has kind of the same sort of music that the rhythms that Desnos has, and sort of it's one that's influenced, I suppose, by his work. You will understand. Earth is a star but once had shone, and then nevermore will we kiss the sun in the wintertime of those images yet gone. How long we linger here like ghosts and shades of hell's last forest. When again will rivers wrap us in song, the days laugh beside us now lost. We few who could cry Lethe's forgetfulness and give into the illusion of unremembering, when shall we know again the world's first dream, the one that crossed to us in proto-nostratic tongues, now known only for milk and mother and God and soul? Think again of us when those evenings ring. And I should mention, for those who don't know, the proto-nostratic language is a theory of language that all languages actually come from one very, very base, way back caveman times type language called the proto-nostratic language. So words like mother and God and milk are actually very similar across a wide swath of different languages that shouldn't really mix, you know, Indo-European versus sort of the American, Native American cultures here in the United States. So these words all have a similar cadence, and there are some theorists who think those all come from the same sort of well source originally.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Todd Sanders, reading some of his work and also translations from the poet Robert Desnos. You know, those are beautiful, beautiful poems. There's a sense of the formal in them. I mean, formal,
yes.
ecstatic. I keep thinking of the ecstatic, too, when you're reading. I mean, you talked about the marvelous, similar. Mm-hmm. But it also feels, you know, there's a sense of another time from those poems, too. There's a resonance and a sense of the traditional in them, too. Is that something you're aware of or trying to?
Not trying to overtly know, but I pull from myself a lot of sources. I'm a very big admirer of Rumi's poetry, and so that kind of ecstatic joy of love in poetry. Most of my own reading of American poets are people like Merwin, some of the other poets more from the 20s and 30s that have that kind of feel of them. You can't sort of help read a lot of French literature and not be imbued with an idea of the romantic, which is so much of their poetry, no matter what kind of thing you're talking about.
We have time for one more poem.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'll end actually with a small one of Desnos's that I've been to Paris a couple of times, and if those of you who have been there know that in the Luxembourg Gardens there is an octagonal little pond that kids sail boats in during the fine summer days while their parents and families look on. Desnos and Yuki, after they were married, lived really right around the corner, and I'm really quite certain this poem actually takes place right at that pond. In a little boat. In a little boat, a little woman, a little sailor, holds the little oars. They are going to travel on a tranquil brook, under a fleeting sky, and sleep on an island. Today it's Sunday. It's good to have fun, hold one another, exchange kisses. This is the beautiful life, Sunday at the edge of the water. Happy are those who envy the little sailor.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was great.
Yeah.
It's the poetry of Todd Sanders and his translations of the French surrealist poet Robert Desnos. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7:30 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.